I'm Joshua from Chain of Flowers.
Hey, I'm Ross from Chain of Flowers also.
I'm Matt in the same band.
We've got a six-piece. We've got South Wales. I believe that would be Cardiff.
American toilets include privacy in the design.
That is so completely wrong. Well, wait, are we talking privacy for you?
Yeah.
In other words, your own privacy, not against other people.
To put it into context, I just went to the bathroom and I had to sit behind like a tiny curtain. Which you could is see through also.
In the UK, what do they call them? It's the piss. When you tour, there's a certain kind of bar.
The toilet circuit.
Right.
So the toilet circuit is like predominantly smaller venues. Americans would appreciate to be a dive bar, I guess.
That's right, but you get to play the toilet circuit.
We do play the toilet circuit, and there's also a venue on the toilet circuit that is what is a converted public toilet.
All right, let's go right off the bat and cause some trouble. I'll do it in the announcer voice. Mm-hmm. Post-punk, shoegaze. When you set out to form this band, was any of that in your vocabulary? Did you go, you know, we're going to make a post-punk shoegaze band?
No, it definitely wasn't. And I don't think a lot of people that use the term post-punk even know what they're trying to define by the term post-punk nowadays either, because it's seemingly become such an all-encompassing kind of term that means everything and nothing at the same time. As far as what we set out to be, no, I wouldn't say so. Shoegaze is something that I wouldn't say that we necessarily are either, but genres are restrictive. Initially, a lot of us have been playing in punk bands, but that's something that we'd all kind of stem from those different backgrounds at the point, and we just generally wanted to do something different. There wasn't any broad scope on what it was. It was quite an organic happening, really. Just five of us at the time came together and the sound came out. The post-punk and shoegaze tags came later.
I would say that the dividing power between, you know, what you were quote doing hardcore is melody. Would you say that that's where the dividing line was?
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, we've gone from making dissonant, very loud, non-melodic music to doing something quite different. But still, I think there's certain sensibilities and elements that have been carried forward.
Because you all look very hardcore. We're sitting in this van. I'm a little scared. Because I've never been amongst this kind of environment before, so I'm feeling a little threatened right now.
Don't feel scared,
sir. No. We're nice blokes.
We're
alright. We're soft as hell, to be honest.
Yeah, so it's just so basically it's on the outside you're hardcore, but on the outside you're just kinda gooey.
Yeah, I mean I no one's ever really described me as hardcore before either, to be honest.
Yeah, well there you go.
You were the first, Dennis, you're the first.
No, I didn't use those words, I would believe.
Josh, yeah, I bought.
I don't believe Josh did it. No, don't blame it on me.
You're a trouble man.
We're in an alley here, man. We could have a hell of a fight. So let's get this over with, because we were gonna do this like early. Well, not that early in your South by Southwest experience. Was that your first South by Southwest?
It was indeed. Yeah.
And how many gigs?
We played four over the course of 4 days.
Oh, that's light.
Yes, it was. Well, I mean, we had friends that were playing 7, 8, 9, even 10.
Yeah, you went light. Oh my God, yeah, that's not hard. Watch, that's not hardcore.
No, but we.
What is wrong with you?
Doing it the way we did it was a lot more worthwhile. There were a lot of people that were playing, I think, a lot of parties and such for the absolute sake of it, and I don't think we needed to make the situation any more difficult than it needed to be.
The purpose of playing South by Southwest, was that to get in front of a lot of people here?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was something we generally got asked to do without any sort of plan of doing it in the very first instance. We confirmed South by Southwest and announced it the day we got home from our last US tour.
Wow.
So knowing that we were coming back.
So you didn't have to fight for that showcase?
No, I think we were like somehow miraculously one of the first of 10 bands that were announced, let alone the thousands that went on to obviously play.
And so now, what did you learn from that experience? Like, if you go back again, which you probably will.
I learned that I really appreciate being able to load in from outside the venue rather than, like, at the top of a hill 3 streets away.
So I almost, picky.
I almost gave myself a hernia carrying that amp, I'm telling you. I'm lucky to be alive, Dennis.
You are. You have no idea. This sucker is drowning. In reverb, you have carefully selected certain guitar sounds. if we were going down the indie route, we'd say, you've curated certain guitar sounds. You have put the vocals really, really, really deep to make us listen to the lyrics. And it's a really happy record. The subject matter just, you know, makes you just want to smile, and it's all lollipops. So tell me about producer, studio, and what you walked in with. This is what I'm most interested in. What did you walk in with? And what did you walk out with? And how did you know that is what you wanted it to be?
We spent a long time working on the record and writing the songs. We didn't put out a record. Well, we released a lot of tapes seminally in the build-up to it, of which two of the songs actually wound up on the record. But we actually went into that studio with an entire record written, bar the very last song, which we knew we were going to give ourselves a bit of space to kind of experiment with. So we went in with a pretty finite idea of what we were trying to create. It was nice going into a studio, it was a place called Mono Valley in South Wales, where supposedly Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody was written on the piano that was in...
Supposedly, so what proof do we have?
Well, the piano has just been sold off for a ton of money. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a good... Well, then you know how that works.
Somehow someone's managed to convince that.
There was graffiti on the top.
Freddie was here. 1970.
That was me, by the way. I have the original knife.
But a lot have been created in that studio. I mean, bands like Thin Lizzy have been in there, like Oasis. There's 8 songs on that record. We had 3 days, 72 hours, sleepless 72 hours in order to get this time in the studio to get it done. So
you had 3 days in the studio for 8 tracks.
Yeah.
So you had to do 2.25 tracks a day.
I started a new job at the time and I couldn't get time off work, so I just had to go to work, and then my friend would drive me to the studio, and then I would record drums all night, and then I would leave at like stupid o'clock in the morning and go back to work in the morning, and they would kind of fill the gaps in between.
I mean, we also went in with somebody that knew that studio incredibly well to make sure we could maximize the time we kind of had in there, because...
Perfect segue, and who was that?
It was a person called Gethin Pearson, who was an old friend back home. I've got to be completely honest, we no longer in contact with the guy at all, because the situation that fell after the record was all rather bleak. And
oh, okay.
It was post-production. He basically wouldn't give us any of the tracks, which delayed the record coming out by months. The guy's basically a clown.
He wouldn't give you the tracks. So you mean he physically sat there and put the tape in his high school locker? I mean, what?
Well, in fairness, the actual process creating the record was fantastic. I can't knock that for a second. But he actually wanted to mix the record then as well. We had other plans. There's a friend of ours called Ben Greenberg in New York that we were always going to be sending the record on to mix.
Once, so he got his little ego got bruised.
It did. And there was also other monetary things involved as well that we weren't informed of going into the studio. And therefore, he took the tracks away and sat on them for a good few months before we could even get them from him. And things went pretty near the nail as far as having to obtain them from us. There was lawyers involved from his end, all sorts of ridiculous.
Lovely. Fantastic.
Exactly. Just what you
really need that.
Yeah, exactly. So it also hit a point by where we'd recorded a record that became so strenuous and stressful for us that we kind of hated it before it even came out.
It's a pretty thick line. It's not a dotted line. It's a very definitive, you know, kind of notion of what you're putting out there. Why is everything so bleak as we sit here on a sunny day?
I think it was like an intentional thing. It might have been the way we kind of write songs. I don't think we really set out to kind of like make anything terribly bleak. It might just be the way that we just managed to all make sounds at the same time and it comes out sounding really bleak and miserable, maybe.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then in between, basically, this is my way of getting rid of genres. It's my way of getting rid of influences.
Did you ever hear by the time Chain of Flowers were with Dennis the Menace?
I did. I heard someone's ass pocket got ripped out.
By Nasher.
San Francisco.